How are you? It's gorgeous weather you're having here. I just came from New York, New York. I really appreciate the sunshine here in Harrisburg. So shall we do a little centering, kind of get here, focus? Let's do that. So if you'd just kind of set things aside and just let your eyes go closed or maybe drop down to about a 45-degree angle and let them relax, go soft, sort of unfocused. Then begin to turn your attention inward and allow it to find the breath. And see if you can allow your attention to stay with the breath as your body just gently expands and contracts with each inhalation and exhalation. And of course, your attention will wander. And when you notice that it has, just gently bring it back to the breath. And as you are breathing, with each exhalation, see if you can let yourself just relax into what's supporting you. Noticing just how few muscles it takes to breathe. Feeling the shoulders drop down. The abdomen relax. And as you're sitting, relaxing, just breathing, would you allow your awareness to expand so that you can do a little check-in with your body? Just noticing how your body is doing this evening. Not noticing in order to do anything, to fix or change anything, but just noticing to be aware of your body. If you would allow your awareness to expand again. This time, let your awareness include your emotions. Checking in with how you're feeling this evening. And notice if an awareness of your emotions comes with any opinions or judgments. Or if you can just turn your attention to what you're feeling. Feel that in your body and let it be as it is. Still feeling the breath moving in your body, expanding and contracting. Let's expand the awareness once again, this time to include your mind. Once again, just noticing how your mind is doing this evening. When you notice the mind, be sure to notice both the content, what the mind might contain currently, and also the process, the state of your mind. Breathing, relaxing, and noticing. Observing your mind this evening. You bring all of your attention and awareness back to the breath. And without needing to think about this, you just watch the process of coming up with the answer to this question. What was your favorite thing about today? Now, please put all of your attention and awareness back on the breath. Feeling the breath moving in your body. Feeling the breath soothe the body. Help the body let go. And at the bottom of the exhalation, would you open your eyes, please? And tell me what you noticed.
Total relaxation.
Total relaxation. Doesn't it make you wonder why people resist meditation? Hey, what else did you notice?
Nothing.
You noticed nothing. You know, another word for nothing is everything. You know, we call it nothing when we don't attend to it for long enough. As soon as we attend to it for a little while longer, we realize it's everything. Okay? Okay, what else did you see? Yes?
I noticed that when I was trying to find the favorite thing of the day, the process for finding that was first going through all the negatives.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit about what it looked like? So was it sort of pictures that came up for you, or was somebody talking to you? Did you hear a conversation about the day, and no, that's not it, and well, there was that, oh, that, yeah, but that wasn't my...
Kind
of both. Uh-huh. Kind of like watching a movie, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. And then after you waded through all of the stuff that actually wasn't your favorite, did you get to a favorite?
Yeah, and then I was really happy.
Yeah. Now, you know, everything is significant. You realize that, huh? There are no insignificant things or moments in life. They're only ones that we miss. But the fact that we miss them or discount them doesn't mean they're insignificant. And so what you've seen in that is critical. Because when we're walking around in life, that sort of process starts and we drift off into unconsciousness because it's so unpleasant. And we never or rarely get to the favorite. Yeah. We just get hit with all the negative, get overwhelmed, and then give up. Okay. Yeah. So if I talk about egocentric karmic conditioning, the illusion of a separate self, the ego that believes itself to be outside of life and outside the moment, the identity, the personality that most of us think is who we are. Would people know what I was talking about? Is that all kind of familiar to you? Yeah. So anytime a question like that is asked, that's who rises up to do the job. Oh, well, there's nothing good that happened today. Remember? You went to work. Yeah, it was just bad from beginning to end. Yeah. So to stay with it, to sit still with it, and to begin to watch that as a process, now we're catching on to something. Now we're seeing what it is that we're not meant to see. Anybody else? What did you notice? Yes?
This is why people resist meditation, because I've been trying this for years and years and years. And every time I pay attention to my breath, my heart pounds hyperventilating. I hate it.
Why do you hate it?
Because my heart pounds hyperventilating. And then I start yawning because I'm not getting enough oxygen. And I think I should be able to do this. You know, people breathe, I breathe. I'm almost 50 years old. I've been breathing for a long time. I just can't do it when I think that.
Now, you see, I personally find that extremely interesting. Because rather than give up, I would be curious to know what's going on.
Why am I giving up? I've been trying. I've been hanging around with guys.
See, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Do you remember Est? You know Est? Okay. Well, this is a famous Est. Okay? I want you to try to stand up.
Okay.
Are you trying? Yeah, you can't try. You either do something or you don't do it. In Zen we say, when you walk, just walk. When you run, just run. Above all, don't wobble. Okay, trying is wobbling. And we stay in a trying because, why? Does anybody know why we stay in trying instead of doing? Safer? Yeah, we get to stay stuck. We get to stay in a world that we know. We get to stay in the same story. We get to remain who we are. So for our identity, that's a very good thing to have happen. If we stop doing that, if we stop trying and start doing, then the identity, the way we've always been, you know that one? Well, that's just the way I am. My teacher used to say that is the worst reason in the world for anything. That is just that's a place to begin. That's not a place to end. We might begin our lives with an idea that, well, that's just how I am. That's just the way I am. I've always been that way. I've just always been that. Well, good. Then stop. Okay? Now then would be a grand time to get over that. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Yes?
Why do you think
Gentleman in the front row.
I noticed that my favorite parts of the day came to be in a video, sort of like a video, mini video.
Okay, so the YouTube generation, the favorite thing came as like a video clip. And were you able to sort of see it from, did you go in and?
No, just small clips.
Oh, I see, just kind of this sort of, 2 seconds. Uh-huh. And you saw them? Was hearing and smelling and that sort of thing part of it?
No smelling.
No smelling, but hearing?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yes?
My experience was kind of different from the radical person sitting next to me. That's because she's my wife, and we're totally opposite.
Opposites do attract,
and they
don't
do,
they?
And they do. But in response to the question you asked, you know, what were your favorite parts of the thing of the day, the mind just leapt up to my consciousness immediately, but they were completely physical. It was waking up after a fairly restful night's sleep and lunch.
Uh-huh.
I kind of said, it was kind of like beating myself up mentally, saying that seems so strange to be focused so much on the physical when you're sitting here in this kind of mental mindfulness state. So I was confused.
Yeah, and yet there's a book that I started to read years ago, and I got this far in the book, which I think was in the preface. And I loved it. It changed my life, and I felt complete. And the fellow's premise was that in our modern world, we are so focused on living that we lose our existence. And it's actually our existence that is the part of life that we treasure. To walk outside and be in nature and to smell the smells and see the colors and to eat a meal full of tastes that we enjoy, to sleep really well and then wake up rested, to those kinds of things are the actual moments when we can feel most alive, and we miss so much of that because we're lost in this story, in this endless conversation about what's wrong and not enough. So I applaud you for that. And we usually get beatings when we're doing the right thing. It's just, you know, something to sort of catch on to. We assume that the voices are beating us up because we're doing something wrong. But they will rarely actually beat us up if we're plunging ahead in the wrong direction. If we're doing something that brings us back to center or to consciousness or presence, then the beating just comes in with viciousness.
Don't let it kill. That's what's happening.
Hang on just 1 second, okay? Yeah, that's all right. We like enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a good thing. Okay, so was there more?
No.
Okay. All right, then we'll just move right into guilt. Which you did not experience, right? Yeah. So.
What is happening when I feel guilty?
Well, what is happening when you feel guilty?
Something I just did. I wish I didn't do it.
Okay. So you just did something, and you wish you didn't do it.
Yeah, and then I usually want to do it again as soon as that feeling goes away.
You could talk to this gal over here, okay? This is the same process. Have you watched this go on for a little while? So if I ask you some questions, you're pretty familiar with your process?
More so.
Okay. So can you tell us the kind of thing that you're talking about, or would this be too revelatory?
Yeah, it would, but what the heck.
We're all friends.
Well, I got married a year ago, and now when the Victoria's Secret catalog comes by, I sneak a peek at it, and then I feel very bad about that.
And you're not looking for things for your bride?
If someone would ask, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so I'm hearing an assumption or a belief that if you are, correct me here, okay, if you are happily married, if you're in love with your wife, you would not want to be looking at other women.
Or I should be more evolved than that or something like that.
Uh-huh.
More spiritually developed than that.
Uh-huh. Spiritually developed people are not interested in things like bodies.
Or if they are, they don't give in to the temptation to,
uh-huh, to look at them.
Right. On purpose, no.
On purpose. Repeatedly. Okay, here's my encouragement to you. I would encourage you, and you notice the language? Because people will say, well, now, Sherry gave me advice to... That would be rude and disrespectful. And I encourage people in directions of awareness. You can see the difference, yeah? So, now that we've established that, you see, I'll just cut to the chase on this. I don't share that belief. Now, if you start chasing these women down, then that might be another conversation. Okay? But I personally don't. You know that kind of notion of I'm married, I'm not dead. That we can appreciate beauty. I had a 84-year-old, I think he was at the time, friend say to me, you know, the eye is drawn to beauty. At 84, he was still having his eye drawn to beauty when he found it. So I would just encourage you to consider the possibility that what's actually going on has more to do with self-hatred than any kind of moral issue. Now, I have a curiosity. Have you discussed this with your wife?
No. She's not here tonight either, so.
I intuited that. So that would be my other encouragement, to have a conversation. I mean, the woman is getting the catalog. Yeah?
No, it was at my mom's house.
Your mom is getting the catalog. This gets better and better, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, you just might have a conversation with your wife about it, rather than a lifetime of feeling bad and guilty and feeling like it's something that you have to keep secret and that sort of thing. It just might be based on a belief or an assumption that's not... not in keeping with your experience once you actually look into what your experience is. What I study and offer to others is awareness practice. And that's based in the notion that we suffer over things that are not understood, that are misconceptions, things that we haven't actually looked into. And that when we bring awareness to any aspect of life, the suffering falls away because we get to what is. When we are living in a conditioned reality, when the mind is making the rules for us, we can get ourselves into all sorts of suffering places. But when we're looking from center at what is so, we often have a very different experience. I would offer you this as well. Do you have children?
Yeah.
How old?
8.
Okay, then this is not going to be an issue for a while. A boy? Girl?
Girl.
Girl, okay. I hope for her sake this gets resolved before she hits puberty. And you have to, you know, like lock her in her room or something. So, anyway, if you could mentor a young boy, he's just at that age where he's noticed and the hormones are starting to kick in, and you don't want him to feel shamed or bad about himself and his body. You want him to see how things work and to understand himself and have a view of himself and others and life that makes him helps him to be a a kind, compassionate, loving person for himself and for everyone else he meets. How would you mentor him through this very tumultuous, chaotic experience of human sexuality? I would really encourage you to do that exercise, and you know, to think about him as a real young person that you love unconditionally, and then know that the way you would want that to be for him is the way you want that young person in you to be and to feel, and that's the kind of mentoring and encouragement that would be very appropriate to give to yourself as you go through this, instead of just leaping to that, I shouldn't do that. That's a bad thing to do. That's wrong. At least pay yourself the respect of finding out exactly what's going on. A lot of us, I think, when we're growing up, are taught to be afraid of how we feel. Anybody? How many of you believe that feeling something leads to acting on it? That if you feel something, there's a good chance you'll do it. Yeah? I see some nods. Yeah. If a person is in a committed relationship and realizes that there's an attraction to another person, then the way to handle that is to just cut that off. Right? Because the two choices are you either cut it off or you get involved with them. Is that true? That's what we believe, isn't it? We learn at an early age that feelings are dangerous, and we learn to control them. We learn to depress them. And then, as we get older and we have depressed more and more and more, we find in some cases that we need medication to deal with the depression that we have created through attempting to control ourselves in ways that are completely unnecessary if we are aware of what's going on. We don't have to be afraid of what we know. So that's my encouragement for all of us. This has tremendous control. Do you know that this controls your life? Let's start there. Yeah? Yeah. People who've been looking at for it. Yeah. Boom. Uh-huh. I kid people that there's about a 30-second gap between not doing what that voice tells you to do and you're lying next to the gutter, face down with your shopping cart parked next to you. Now, that's a funny image, sort of. But do you know how true that is? That when the voice says, well, you'd better, I mean, people start hopping too, right? You better be careful. How many of you have insurance? You better be careful. Okay? So we are conditioned, heavily, deeply, deeply conditioned, that life is a frightening, dangerous, it's like landmines that we are trying to get through to get to the other end, the other side, safely. And any wrong move, anything that we do, any misstep could just result in immediate destruction. Is that true? Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's what this is presenting for us. And I'm just hoping that all of you will take the encouragement, the challenge, if you will, to just say, whoa, hey, wait a minute. Stop it. I'm being controlled by something that I don't even understand. I don't even know what it is. This voice says something to me, and I start scrambling around, feeling what it tells me I should be feeling, doing what it's telling me I should be doing. I don't even know who the voice is. I don't even know who that is, who's talking to me. So in awareness practice, that's what it's about. We're learning to sit still and see what's so. Okay? If there's something really scary out there, we're intelligent. We'll figure that out. But if it's not, and all we're being is scared, if we're being frightened out of our lives, then that's a really important thing to know. And I will tell you, I'll promise you, money back guarantee, that if you come to the conclusion that you would like to be free of this, that you would like to be free to live in the present, to see what's so, to make your own choices, to be your own authority, to look to your own heart to guide you in your life, that it is possible to do that. It is absolutely possible to do that. It's not even hard. And in fact, it's fun and joyful. So there's a little commercial for awareness practice. And it's cheap. In fact, it's free. You can just do it anytime. Good deal. Okay, what else is going on? Oh, I have one more thing to say to you before we go on. As long as you are willing to feel guilty, there will always be something to feel guilty about. That's true with all of those kinds of regret sorts of deals. And I would say, I would put fear in there. As long as a person is willing to be afraid, there will always be something to be afraid of. As long as a person is willing to be angry, oh, let's just fill in the blank. As far as I can tell, everything could slide in there. As long as we're willing to have that experience, there will always be content that supports it. Okay, what's anybody else seeing? Oh, here she comes with a microphone.
I notice in my meditation, when I'm noticing the breathing, and I'm just going with the air and trying to watch how it goes into my nose and really paying attention, then the next thing I know, I'm thinking about something over in a ditch or something. And so I wonder,
isn't it astounding?
What happens to my mind in between that gap of the...
I am so glad you asked. You can answer this, and then I would like to hear other people answer it too. What occurs to you when I say the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention? Now, just with what you laid out there, so you're right there, you're paying attention to your breath, you're staying with it, you're so present, aren't you? Yeah, absolutely present. Boop.
That's what happens.
Somewhere, you know not where. Okay? What's it like when you find yourself over there?
There's nothing going on. Then I just noticed that I had that leap over into the thoughts.
Yes.
And then aggravation comes up. It's like, there I did it again. I wasn't focused.
Two things about that. One, that's a scam, the aggravation. That's a complete scam by this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah? And if you listen, in fact, if you listen carefully, I doubt that what you hear is, oh, there, I did it again. Oh, I did it again. What you hear is, see, you did it again. Very different message. Okay?
It's a judgment, that's true.
Yes, and not only is it a judgment, but it's a judgment by someone who's talking to you. Yeah? So if I say, darn, my attention just keeps wandering, that's one thing. Your attention keeps wandering. That's very different, isn't it? So it's important to figure out which one you're hearing. Are you the person who is having the experience, or are you the person who's listening to somebody else criticize you?
It's a good question.
Yes, it is. It's imperative that we know the answer to that question. Okay? Because that voice that talks to you, that criticizes you, I'm going to suggest, now, you know, you'll have to do this and find out for yourself, but I'm going to suggest that it's very likely that the voice that beats you up afterwards directed your attention to the mind. Yeah? So it's a, look over there. What is the matter with you? Okay? Now, if we keep in mind that in meditation, we are not going anywhere. We're not. All we're doing is being here and noticing. Technically, it doesn't matter what you notice. But this little Zen master from hell, okay, would have you believe that you have to have a particular experience. Usually it involves clearing the mind. And when you have that, you're having the right experience. Anything else, you're not having the right experience. But it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you're paying attention. So you're paying attention to the fact that your attention wandered. You're aware that your attention wandered. Good. Gold star up on your little meditation chart. Yep. Okay? Very different experience. Yes? From being beaten up for realizing that you're present. Because that's what happened. You're there, you're breathing, focusing on the nose, you're gone. You realize you're gone. Well, when you realize you're gone, you realize it from here. So you're here. So why should you have a beating?
Well, sometimes I actually do just let go and then come on back to the breath again.
I would support that wholeheartedly.
And then I fall into the ditch again somewhere.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Now, in Zen practice, we count from 1 to 10. That's what we do. Take a breath in, we breathe out, we count 1, silently. Breathe in, breathe out, count 2. People get very frustrated because they can't get past 1. I like to point out that 1, spiritually speaking, is a good number. If you get to 35, you might say, I think I spaced out a little there. Okay? I think I need to tune in a little sooner. But the thing about it is, all we're learning to do is be here in conscious, compassionate awareness. Conscious, compassionate awareness. Nowhere does it say that beating yourself is a good way to get there. In fact, it's a good way not to be there. So if your mind, if you sit down for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever it is to meditate, and you pass through center with conscious awareness 3 times, okay? If you are approaching that person who is making that effort with conscious, compassionate awareness, you've arrived. People see what I mean? So it's just a scam, the same kind of scam that says, as soon as you, what, help me out.
Lose weight.
Lose weight. As soon as you
get the clutter gone.
Get the clutter gone. As soon as you, it's another form of losing weight, isn't it? As soon as you
get enough money.
Stop looking at Victoria's Secret catalog. As soon as you
get enough money.
Get enough money. As soon as you
exercise.
As soon as you
get organized.
Mm-hmm. As soon as the house is paid for, as soon as the kids go to college, as soon as you retire, as soon as, yeah? Okay? Then you're going to feel what? Okay, let's do that, shall we? Let's do that. Okay, close your eyes, would you? And I want you to consider what is for you that as soon as. What's that one that's dragging you around through life? As soon as, and there's that implication, right? You just know that when that day arrives, you're going to what? Okay, let yourself go there right now. It's happened. It's happened. It's happened. There you are. Oh my gosh. You've arrived. You've made it. You've done it. Finished. It's complete. How do you feel? How do you feel? People are probably clapping you on the back and yelling congratulations. How do you feel? Where do you feel that in your body? Will you be relaxed then? Will your heart be open? Will it be filled with compassion and loving kindness? Little animals come and jump in your lap, and birds land on your shoulder, and people will begin to call you Francis. Okay, come on, open your eyes. What? How are you going to feel?
Relaxed.
Relaxed? Who said relaxed? Okay, did you feel it? You felt it. You felt it. Just sitting right there. Just as soon as you arrived, you were relaxed. All right?
Fulfilled.
Fulfilled? Yeah? And did you feel fulfilled? Did you feel it? What does fulfilled feel like?
Satisfied.
Satisfied? Okay, what does satisfied feel like?
Peaceful.
Peaceful. What does peaceful feel like?
Shines out of your chest.
Shines out of your chest. What else?
Transformed.
And what does transformed feel like?
I don't
know. So I'm guessing in that exercise, there was an understanding that you would feel something as a result of the transformation, but you didn't get there. Anybody else? Yeah.
If I get a goal, I'll be looking for the next goal. If you want to give it much less matter, I'll be looking for the next goal.
Okay, so you have this sense that this might, in fact, be a setup. Uh-huh. Can you see, you know, we're so familiar with the carrot, right? The donkey and the carrot. And so it would be, I'm just encouraging you, you know, because encouraging people is what I do, to go home and get your donkey. You can, you know, get a picture if you want, if you don't have a big backyard. Get your picture of your donkey, get your stick, okay, get your string, and then put on the end of that string whatever this is driving you with. Just to have a visual, right? Just have a little visual of, do I really believe that? Because is there anything that you've ever accomplished in your life? And did you think when you accomplished that, that you would have that wonderful feeling that you're now being promised you're going to feel after you accomplish the... And how many of those do you reckon you've had in your life that in fact just turned into the, but that wasn't really it. Okay, so let's do something else. Close your eyes again, would you? And I would like for you now to allow yourself to know what it is that you would like to feel. So whatever that is for you, whatever that word is it joy or peace or satisfaction or contentment or happiness, fulfillment, whatever it is. Come up with your word. Once you have your word, just begin to say that word to yourself silently. Just repeat it silently to yourself. And notice what happens in your body as you say that word. And now, each time you say that word, allow an image or picture to come to you that represents that. Okay, now it might be something from your past, from your life. It might be something from a movie. It might be whatever it is. Okay, might be a photograph or a painting or a sculpture. Each time you say that word, allow an image to come to you. And then move into those times in your life. Not going up into your head to think about it, but just allowing the images, the pictures to come to you. Say the word. There's the image. There's the experience. You feel the feeling. You say the word. One more breath, and then to the bottom of the exhalation, and open your eyes, if you would. Tell me what happened. Yeah.
And I had an image of walking, this is a little contradictory, walking kind of in the sunshine with the soundtrack of Gene Kelly singing, I'm Singing in the Rain, in the background.
Then up the little lamppost you go, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And you felt it?
And what I felt, and I think somebody else may have alluded to this, was just this energy of vitality bursting from my chest.
Yes. Did you like it?
I loved it.
All right. Who else?
I focused on the word ease. Be at ease.
Uh-huh.
And several scenes popped through my mind, but the one that really lingered that I recalled from our past is sitting on the beach overlooking the ocean, watching the kids, our kids play at the ocean's edge and just listening to the waves and just being very light, very at ease.
Uh-huh. And you liked it?
Very much.
Here's the lady down here.
The word for me that came up was contentment. But what was kind of discouraging is when you continued with having us associate a visual or an experience with the word every time we said the word. There were some images that came up for me, and most of them were images of loss and a great deal of sadness and loss.
Yes, that's not a surprise to me at all. How many of you struggled with that? Okay? So I was just doing a workshop in New York, and I was talking with people about, well, I always talk with people about the same thing, so of course I was talking with people. Goes without saying. But what I was referring to was a process that this uses for controlling people. Do you have children? And do you know the experience of just going along in life and suddenly there's an image of something hideous happening to one of your children? How many of you with children know that? I mean, it is universal. And I am convinced, after this amount of time of looking at it, that it's self-hatred, that it's that egocentric karmic conditioning, that illusion of being separate from life. How do you stay in a survival mode in the face of everything that life brings to us? Well, that's how. So every time you stop, every time there's a little bit of space, there's a moment where you could relax and receive and enjoy life and feel good, this is going to come in with the story of what's wrong. Remember I called this something wrong, not enough? Okay? If you notice The conversation that you're hearing all the time is something wrong and not enough. And so my encouragement to you, should you want to get to the other side of that, is to persist. If it's contentment, go at it, okay? Find pictures in magazines that represent this. Figure out what is the color of contentment for you. Find quotes. Find whatever takes you to a place of contentment. And just stay with it. Stay with it, stay with it, stay with it. And if you persevere, it will lose its ability to affect you. It's a true story. This will always lose if we persevere. The thing that it's got going is that we don't persevere. We give up. You know, I don't want to feel bad. I'm not going to think about contentment. I don't want to feel bad. You with me? Was there more?
Okay. You put a microphone in my hand, I have to use it. My problem is I don't see anything or envision anything.
That's not a problem.
It's not a problem. Thank you.
That is not a problem. I know it's not a problem because I have the exact same experience. I've been doing guided imageries now for 35 years or something, and the first time somebody started into a guided imagery, I went, you know, they're talking about walking in a meadow and the flowers and the colors and the birds and the singing, and it's just like I went, okay. And yet, I knew exactly. I knew where the meadow was. I knew what birds were there. I knew everything. I just didn't see them. So, not a problem. What was your word? Peace? And could you go to times in your life when you felt peaceful? Yeah. And could you feel the peace in your body? Yeah. That's it. See, it always wants to make everything a problem for us, right? Something wrong. Not enough. Yeah. Anybody else? Who else?
As I was starting to feel what it was I was thinking about, there was a voice that said, "This is just a shadow, not the real thing."
Huh. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that uplifting assessment. Yeah, you're on my side, aren't you, buddy? Pulling for me. Yeah, but you saw it. You were there, sort of.
Yeah.
You saw it more clearly when I reflected it back to you.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I will often point out to people, anybody in the room who thinks that you are involved in an intimate relationship with another person, I can promise you, you're not. Okay? You have one intimate relationship. Okay? And here's the proof of it, folks. When this gets tired of that other person, that other person better be packing up. You with me? Yeah, so we are just, one of the precepts that I vow to live by each day is not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Now, when people first encounter that, you know, ego is just ecstatic because, yeah, that's right. You know, I have trouble with authority figures. Yeah, because there's only one authority in my life. And that's the fantasy of authority that precept is talking about. It's not somebody out there. Somebody out there could never do the kind of damage to me that this can and will do. Yes?
When, as parents, we get that nightmare of something terrible happening to our child, even though they're sleeping in the next room or whatever, it's self-hatred. Can you explain, I mean, I understand this, but how does that work and how do you get rid of it?
This ego, this identity that we have taken on and now believe is us. It's a survival system. Now, a lot of it was to help us survive. But at a certain point, it's not trying to help us survive. It's surviving. And I compare it to, do you have mistletoe here? Okay, that's a really good image for it, because it's a parasite, and it lives off of a host. And in this case, you're the host. It has its life by sucking your life force. Now, people will say, well, that doesn't make any sense, because wouldn't you think it would want to take care of the host? Now, I live out in the country, and every time I go out from my house, I see the trees that are dying. And it's not a long, slow process. That stuff comes in, takes over, and kills the tree really very, very quickly. And, of course, it's also propagating itself, or however that works, and going to new trees. So it's not actually the case. People will sometimes think that this is sort of a relationship that is mutually beneficial. It's not mutually beneficial. And as soon as we start paying attention to it, we realize that. It's very, very cruel, and it controls you through fear. So this is just one of those little things to notice about how life works. When you're feeling, you're going along in your life, and you're feeling expansive, write this down somewhere, okay? Because this is not the kind of thing that this system will ever want you to remember. It's the kind of thing that I say it goes in, and whoop, and it's gone forever, right? But just notice in your life, you're going around, and you're feeling expansive. You feel good. Now, something good might have happened, and that's why you feel good. Or do you know those just random times when you just feel good? And if somebody said, well, what's going on? Well, really, nothing. I just feel good, just happy. Notice what changes that energy for you. And I'm here to suggest it's fear.
Right.
And besides which, you have to do it for exercise.
Right. Am I doing it fast enough? Is my heart rate up? Right, yeah.
So, am I losing any weight here? That's
yeah. And so what I started thinking about is I do have this, like sometimes I go into a meeting at work and I've drawn up a map and I go in and I ride my bike and I just see where I get to, you know? And those are the times when I'm feeling happy. Those are the times when I'm feeling like life is living itself and I'm just this zipping along. And then there are those times when the whole time I'm obsessed about, you know, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the difference, right? In the one, you're in your body. You're in your body, you're in your senses, you're in life. In the other, you're in a conversation. And the conversation is never going to lead anywhere happy. It's just not. Yeah. This is what we do instead of living. Sadly, we're so conditioned that an awful lot of people believe that this is living. Okay, thank you. Who else? Over here.
Thank you. My question is about, it's about pain. I suffer from migraines and a lot of headaches a lot of time, and it's really hard for me because if I come back into the body through my breath, I feel that pain. So how do you work with that pain? What is that pain doing? Part of me feels like it's coming from ego, you know, because like, migraines are, you know, one of those things that nobody knows what causes them. But
do you feel intuitively, you sense that it's more a mental, emotional, spiritual issue than an actual physical issue?
I don't know if I feel that or if I've been conditioned to believe that that's so.
Huh.
And I feel an intense pain that I can't function through.
Uh-huh. What do you do when that pain hits?
I guess in a spiritual sense, I leave my body and I'm completely not aware of my body anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And then do you take something? You go to bed, take something, and wait it out?
Go to sleep, wait it out. You know, basically put on hold everything that I want to do. And it often happens just when I have everything just right for the, you know, experience of doing art or whatever I've been waiting to do, and all of a sudden I don't feel well enough to do it.
So do you feel punished by it?
I think I feel like it's very unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't feel random. There's an intentional feeling to it.
Sometimes it feels random, but sometimes it definitely feels like there's something in
it. Yeah, so in other words, if you've got everything all set up to do something, you can be pretty sure you're going to get a migraine?
A lot of the time, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. So do you have some superstition going about, I just don't want to set anything up because if I do, I'll get a headache?
No, I keep doing it.
You keep doing it? Good for you. Okay. There are two things about that for me. One is, of course, I'm very supportive of awareness practice. And that means to be as present as you can possibly be to what's going on with your body. Not to abandon your body when it most needs you. Can you sense that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a huge tendency that we have, to just kind of bail out on ourselves when times get tough. And most of us have learned that because people have bailed out on us a lot when things were tough. And so my encouragement to you is not to do that, and also not to have any standards. You stay with the pain, you stay with yourself, watching everything about it, for as long as you can, and then you do whatever you need to do to survive it. And then the next time it happens, you stay with it. You stay with it. You stay with it. Is there something in your life that is like that? A sport that you do, or an activity, or something where you build in that way?
Not really. I never had that experience of sports or anything like that.
Okay. And yet you can sort of sense it?
Yes.
Yeah. That if you were going to, if you decided you wanted to do a 100-mile bike ride, you would probably start out with lower numbers, and you would build. Okay, if you were going to run a marathon, you'd start jogging, and then you'd go into a training program, and you would do more, and you would do more, and you'd do longer runs, and so it's that same sort of progression. And what you're doing is staying with yourself through this experience. That's one piece of it. And it's really, I don't know if you've ever been around anybody when this has happened, but I've actually done this with people, and that is to talk them out of a headache by focusing their attention. Has anybody ever seen that happen? So where is it? Where is it in your head? Where's the pain? Where's the center of the pain? How big is it? How far into your head is it? Where are the edges of the pain? What color is the pain? Can you make it a different color? Can you make it smaller? Can you concentrate it? Can you expand it? And by focusing the attention in that way, very often a person will lose the headache. Because maintaining the headache, have you ever stood out at night and watched a very distant star, and if you look directly at it, you can't see it, but if you look slightly to the side, you can see it? People know this experience? Yeah. And it's like that. It's turning the attention directly to something. It's very difficult for it to be maintained. We actually maintain most of what we're maintaining through avoidance. So the Zen way of talking about that is that nothing can stand up under scrutiny, because there is nothing that is anything. Okay? It's made up of things. And when we start looking directly at something, it begins to move into its components rather than staying in this illusion of a whole. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it that I would encourage is for you to begin to take very, very good care of the person who has this life experience. So there is somebody who has this headache. Now, I'm going to suggest it's not you. Because as you indicated, you usually bail out when she's having a headache. Right? But she doesn't have the ability to bail out. She has to stay there and have it. And so for you to stay there with her in the way you would stay with a loved child who was experiencing that kind of pain. There's nothing you can do for the person, but you can be there. You can be present, you can be encouraging, you can be supportive, you can be caring, you can be willing to do whatever it is that you might be able to do to be helpful. Okay?
Thank you very much.
And anybody, I mean, we were talking about a headache, but it applies to just about everything in life. Here's a lady up here in the front.
Just to expand on that a little bit. So what you're saying is, if you have pain, to sit with the pain is how you get through it and maybe make it less the next time.
Yeah. And so what I often tell people is that almost nobody actually has ever had a headache. Because at the first sign of discomfort, we are trained to start scrambling in another direction. And so to stay with it and find out exactly what. Not from here, but really being with.
So that is a part of not falling unconscious then?
Yes. Yes.
And bringing staying conscious in your life.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're just such a drugged up society. Because anytime anybody has anything, feels anything, has a life experience, we have a pill to take. To me, it's very sad because, number one, generally speaking, it's not helpful because the body just continues to go in the direction. You know, there's a condition, and the person doesn't directly address the condition. They take something, but the condition goes right on. So then you have to take something more or something stronger or something in addition to, and then that thing that you're taking is affecting something else. And we're just so disempowered. There's just this giant assumption that life is too hard. It's too painful. It's too hard. And what we really need to do is escape from it. But it's actually not. It's not too hard. And it's way, way, way more fun to be participating in it. And we can prove that to ourselves in all kinds of little tiny ways. You know, something is painful in the body. Instead of going to the doctor and getting a prescription for whatever it is, find out what it is and find out how to take care of it, how to address it. It's your body. There's nobody who's going to be a better expert for your body than you. And so to approach everything in life in that way makes us an active participant instead of a frightened, disempowered person who's just hoping nothing's going to happen.
I have found that with body and health, being aware and going to an acupuncturist, not taking something to mask what it is,
yeah,
that eventually you can find out what's really going on.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, which doesn't mean we're not going to die.
Right.
But there's no pill for that yet. So I think being consciously aware and present with ourselves as we're going through life is the best preparation we can have for whatever is going to happen next. Yeah, hoping it'll go away. Why would we want it to go away? It's our life.
It's your life.
Yeah.
Being present to it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. This gentleman over here.
Would it be accurate to suggest that that pain that, in a different fashion, I also try and bail out on as soon as it occurs, is more an effect of something else, or is that the cause? I mean, how would you avoid that or prevent that?
I don't really have much interest in avoiding or preventing. That's kind of a trap. You know, that's going up here to try to figure out life. When we are actually present in life, what we need, Jesus said it best. Any fans of Jesus here? Big fan of Jesus. He went out, he sent the disciples out. You know the story? Sent the disciples out, and they were afraid. It was bad times. It was You know, I was going to make a little political joke, but I'm not going to do it. Restrain myself. So he sent the disciples out, and they were really afraid of what would happen to them. What if they catch us? What if they put us in jail? What do we do? What do we say? And he told them not to worry. When the time comes, what you need will be given to you. There it is. I mean, it is true everywhere, all the time, always has been, always will be, as far as I can tell. Now, what's given to us might not be our first choice. However, as far as I can tell, life is truly remarkable because everybody's life is absolutely perfect for them. Everybody has the right difficulties, the right issues, the right problems, the right gifts, the right skills, the right everything for their life. Have you noticed that? It's an amazing thing. Now, we can get into a belief that we would be better off if we had somebody else's problems. Okay? But can you imagine how disorienting it would be if suddenly you woke up tomorrow and you were somebody else? You had a whole different set of physical issues, a different mental and emotional issues. You know, you didn't have the same opinions that you have today. Can you imagine? It would be quite a little shock. So in each moment, what we need to see in order to take the next step in freedom is what's right there in front of us. If we just concentrate on that, it's more than enough to do for a life. Now, conditioning wants us to figure things out. Okay, well, what was going on with that? Or maybe, so we get into the thing of somebody has cancer. Okay, so now why? Why do they have cancer? One of my closest friends had cancer at a very early age. I mean, the girl ate enough broccoli in her lifetime to sink several ships. They practically lived on broccoli, got cancer. Okay? It wasn't her diet. And so, to me, if we look at our lives in that way, what is the opportunity in this moment? What am I not seeing in this moment? What am I focusing on in this moment that is keeping me in a limited perspective? And as we look at life in that way, it opens up for us. It opens up for us. The answer is always there. We're just usually focused on this instead. Did that speak to it? Good. Thank you. Okay.
Is disassociation trying to not hear this?
Yes. I think the technical term is checking out. Okay? So you just bloop, and then you're not available for it anymore. What we practice is disidentification. So I'm identified with a part of me who is what? What might you be identified with? Huh? So I'm identified with somebody who's totally wrapped up in my job. Who are you? Well, I'm a plumber. Well, what do you like to do? Nothing. I plumb. You interested in anything else? No. I plumb. Okay? And so you could say, ooh, this person is kind of seriously identified with that way of being. And so what we're practicing in awareness practice is disidentifying, so that I can now see the part of me who has been the dominant force in my life, the plumber. Okay? I can now see that that's just a part of me. Now, you might wonder what I am if I'm no longer the plumber, okay? And what I am is conscious, compassionate awareness. That's what this is. Jiu Kennett, who is a Zen master at Shasta Abbey, said, her way of talking about it was, I am not it. It is all of me. So it's not that I am awareness. Awareness is all of me. And as I practice stepping back, which is, of course, what meditation practice is designed to help us do. And as I step back more, I can see now the tendency to go into this, or to go into that, or now to get upset over this, or to get angry over this, or to get afraid in those circumstances, or get totally caught up in something that's going on at work, and I don't even know my family's there. I'm just slamming plates around. Okay? So I'm stepping back. I'm learning to step back and see this incarnation for what it is, rather than thinking it's me. You with me? Is there more?
You're checking out with emotion.
Yeah. People who have suffered serious trauma or something like intense pain or that sort of thing will learn simply to go somewhere else for the duration. And that's definitely not what we're doing.
Is that bad?
To do that?
If you're in a trauma...
Nothing is bad. I like to point out that I'm as close to an amoral person as anybody is ever going to run into. I don't have shoulds about anything. I don't have, you know, I just don't. My only interest is awareness and freedom. If it leads to suffering, then, and the person doesn't want to suffer, I would like for them to be free of that. Just checking out is hardly... it's not a lasting solution. So I would wish for the person that they would be able to be present to themselves in that trauma and heal it.
Well, at times I check out. I go to the happy place.
Check out and go to the happy place.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, though, because I don't think you've checked out. Do you know where you are? Do you know what's going on around you? I mean, if somebody, what's your name?
Joe.
If somebody said Joe, would you know who they were talking to?
I'd probably bring me back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you're just going somewhere else inside yourself.
Correct.
And focusing on something that you enjoy rather than being where you are. Anything,
Or enjoy nothing. Get the mind as blank as you can.
Uh-huh. Yeah. If there's an awareness that it's going on, great. If you're going unconscious to accomplish it, yeah, then you would be setting yourself up for trouble down the road.
I do that, and then other times I will step back and review what's going on to work with this.
Yeah, well, one of the things that, and we don't really have time to do it tonight, so I'm just going to tell you. When I encourage people to find those places inside, so how are you going to feel when you've arrived, or what's the way that you would like to feel? I encourage people to find that experience in their body so that they can have that as their reference point rather than this.
Okay.
I will go to a place of, you know, the gentleman with the very expansive heart to learn to live with that feeling with conscious awareness of everything that's going on.
Okay,
yeah. Okay. So I thank you very much. I always love being in Harrisburg. Thank you.